connection with the kind of portfolio spending for giving GMO be a portfolio to gain. Is that if we would 40% of three capital, that's about you. As a matter of fact, knows I wish I had changed. I had 50. Tell me Jesus dealt with lending. Barely all of his parables. Close. That's not the one. What is it? Okay. Yeah, it's found looping right after the that's it. That is it. Do you have the one in this unjust servant? He fucking cheated and the man out. Yeah, made for who the money and Krishna. Yes. Yes. Now our wife is thumb ready. It's ready. Let's go to prayer. In the name we pray. Thank you for the answer. We ask it from our opinions. Really in on Jesus Christ. And we're up. By the way, this, okay, gross. So that means to give with money, to live, okay? Grash and ecstasy, okay? It'll be, and it's on page 4. You're going to see an exercise. And what you have to do is to read through each one of these and determine whether or not that constitutes a spending, a give, a lend, a ownership, or is it something mixed? Okay? Now, another thing you need to know about the couple, about this exercise. This is for a husband and wife couple, ages 43 and 41, with two children. They ain't business owners. This ain't Rockefeller. This ain't, you know, a Warren Buffett. Okay, these are working adults, okay? So, number one, when I purchase automobile insurance, what is that? Is that a spend, a give, a lend, or an ownership, use of money, or mixed? Okay, let's go over it again. Let's tell me what it is, what you think it is, and why. I'm buying liability insurance for my car. Is that a spend? Is that a give with my money or I own with my money? Okay. Why is it mixed? Not that I agree, but why do you say it's mixed? Okay. And I see where you're coming from, but liability insurance is not absolutely mandatory in the state of California. If you don't have liability, and by the way, most people that drive in California are underinsured. That's why if you drive a car in California, listen very carefully. I done been in 2 or 3 automobile accidents, and I got to drive back tomorrow, okay? If you drive in California, most people have the bare minimum of liability, which is called 1530, meaning I never pay more than $15 of liability claim to any one person and no more than $30,000 for the entire incident. You follow what I'm saying? So to insure yourself, you always want to have under an uninsured motorist. And you want to carry at least $50,000 to $100,000 of uninsured or underinsured liability. Because the person that hits you and injures your back, $15,000 ain't nothing. So what you do is you take the first $15,000 from their insurance company and the rest of it comes from yours. So you sue both their company and your own insurance company. That's called uninsured motorist. So in my book, payments on automobile liability are a spend with money. Okay? A expenditure. You can buy cheap or you can buy expensive insurance. It's a spend. Okay? Now, if you have a car installment loan, they don't care if you have liability, but you will have collision. Okay? Let's keep going. Number 2, I pay premiums on a $500,000 10-year level term life insurance policy. Is that a spend with my money, a give with my money, or ownership? By the way, ownership means that whatever I'm investing in, I expect to appreciate over time. So that's the key to ownership. I expect it to appreciate over time. It may depreciate, but I expect it to appreciate over time. Okay, so if you're just buying a car for your own personal use, chances are it'll never be ownership. Cars appreciate 18% the first year, 17% the next year, 16% the next year. So if you're wise, you only buy a car when it's depreciated down to half its value. Okay, so let's go to the next one. I have a $500,000 life insurance policy. It's 10-year level term. Is that a spend with my money, an ownership with my money, or a give with my money? No, it's not, because that ain't going to appreciate in value. As a matter of fact, okay, that is a spend, okay? You are renting from a life insurance company the possibility of premature death. At the end of 10 years, and by the way, listen carefully now, no insurance company will sell you a $500,000 10-year level term policy unless they have a pretty good chance that you'll outlive the policy. You understand that? I would be foolish to sell you a policy if I didn't think you could outlive. So when you buy term life insurance, you're renting life insurance. It is a spend, right? And chances are almost 90% that you'll outlive the term. You will outlive the term. Now, you may not be insurable after the 10 years. You have a better chance of being uninsurable, meaning you have some type of illness that will no longer make you insurable than you have of dying. Okay? But that is a spend with your money. Let's keep going. I'm buying a $275,000 home purchase. I got 28 years left on my mortgage payments. Now, is that a spend with my money, a give with my money, or ownership? Okay, it's a mix. Now, okay, I agree. Now, in what way is it a mix? Your equity increases over time. Okay? Okay. So, generally speaking, when you purchase a home, by and large, it's a mixture of ownership and spending. But the first 5 years is primarily spending. If not the first 10 years, it's primarily spending. Because what you're really doing is renting capital. You're renting capital. That's what a mortgage is. You're renting capital. So the first thing, when we talk about ownership, buying a home is considered to be ownership, but what you're really buying is long-term appreciation in equity over time. Okay? But it's primarily an expenditure, because you got to pay utilities, you got to pay taxes, you got to pay closing costs. You got to buy title insurance. Everybody gets a pound of flesh when you own a home. That's why you get a tax deduction for the interest, to be suckered into buying it. And where it really gets bad is when you put your emotion attached to a piece of property. Then you won't be happy unless you have that home and a bigger home. So most people say, and we're told, that our home is our biggest investment. That's not true. It's your biggest expenditure. It's not necessarily an investment, and there are a whole lot of better investments to have than home ownership. Now, if you buy a home as income property, that's all ownership. Because somebody else is paying rent, and hopefully they're paying the mortgage for you. So when I rent a home out, I want to rent it out enough to pay the mortgage, pay the taxes, pay the insurance, and pay everything, homeowners association and everything. Under that case, it's all ownership, good ownership. Okay, let's keep going. Yes. Well, yes. Now, we'll talk about that in another session, not today, okay? And that's called the best way to buy a home. Listen, this is wisdom. The best way to buy a home is a 30-day principal, a 30-year principal and interest mortgage, and pay it off in 10 years. Let me go over that again. The best way to buy a home is to get a 30-year principal and interest mortgage and pay it off in 10 years. When you pay it off in 10 years, you got to throw big chunks of money at it every year, $20,000, $20,000, $20,000, okay? And we can explain how that's done, where you can literally pay the house off in 10 years, and now you own the home, and you're not paying those huge volume of interest. Next one, I just purchased a 2016 Lexus, tell you what I kind of like, the GS350, okay, with a 42-month installment loan. Lord have mercy, 72 months installment, okay, 70, how many, 6 years, right? Okay, so it's going to take me 6 years to pay off this GS350 2016 Lexus. Now, the question, is that a spend with my money? That's a spin. That's a spin, okay? That's right. It's going to appreciate. Now, they won't appreciate the full 18% for 17.5% because it is an upscale, you know, Japanese high-end. That's a spin with money. That's not ownership. See, so we need to get it all wrong. We people, what kind of car do you own? No, what kind of car did I spend for? Right? And we need to get it out of our minds that we can only get a car with an installment loan. That's stupid. That we can only get a car with an installment loan. There was a question. Yes. Okay. You could do that, but I would say, the question is, what if I buy something with the returns on my ownership? And you should do that at the strategic time. See, all ownership is future spending or either future giving. If we back off, all ownership is future spending or future giving. In the present, it is accumulating and compounding for a future use. So if you got to remodel the church, and if we were all students of faith and finance, we would have some ownership that was going to be used for a future use, then we could use it now. You follow what I'm saying? Let's keep going, okay? Okay, now, okay, I tell you what, trust me, it will come out in this part. It'll come out. Stay with me. It'll come out, okay? The next one, remember, I'm just trying to make sure we don't walk away fuzzy about what I'm talking about when I say spend with, give with, and own with. And what you should beginning to get the picture is, they got you suckered on spending. And you bought in 100%. Now, let's say I purchased a 2001 pickup truck for a family business. Is that spend with? Is that own with or give with or lend with? If I'm buying it for a family business, that is an own with. Now I can depreciate it. Okay? I can write it off. I can write off mileage. I can write off the insurance. Now the insurance on that car is an ownership expenditure. which is different than a personal expenditure that is just consumption. Now, another golden nugget I'm going to give you. This is a free one. Write it down. You are not a consumer. If you are God's children, you are not a consumer. You are an economic unit waiting to blossom. Okay? You are not a consumer. I am an economic unit waiting to blossom. I'm waiting for my harvest as an economic unit. If I'm married, my marriage is an economic unit. You're not going to spend every dime that comes in the house. Neither one of you or the kids, because we're an economic unit and we count the cost of everything that we do and we enjoy it. Now, let's go to the next one. I have a 401k and a 403b contribution to my employer's plan. I missed one. Which one? I'm buying the duplex. Okay, I'm buying a duplex rental property. Is that a spend? Is that an ownership or a give with? That's ownership. Okay? In my first home, it was a duplex. Okay? And we lived in one side, and we created another side into a daycare center, a nursery home with a school. All right? I employed my mother to come work in the family business. I'd work her 6 months and lay her off 6 months. And when she got laid off, she went and collected unemployment insurance. They knew her down at the Richmond Unemployment Office. Your son then laid you off again. I was going to buy a house and get it out to Section 8 and put it on a Section 8 rental. So that duplex is ownership. Now, I got a 401k or a 403b contribution plan with my employer. That money that goes in there, is that spend with money, give with money, or ownership? That's ownership. That's tax advantage, tax deferred ownership. Tax advantage, tax deferred. Next one. I done bought me a real nice 60-inch flat screen TV. Okay? Is that a spend with or a give with? Okay? Now, I just purchased an iPhone 6. Okay? S Plus. $799. Is that a spend with, a give with, or an own with? Well, if you use it for business, I use mine for business too. But mine was donated to me by my wife. So I got a used one that I use for business. Okay? But this is the second used one. The other one was so old, I couldn't put no more apps on. Okay, let's keep going. What was that? No. If you buy an iPhone for personal use, it's a spend. Now, I have cash value permanent life insurance, second to die. What was that again? The Roth IRA. I missed the Roth. Okay, I have a Roth IRA contribution. Is that a spend, a give, or an own with? That's an own with, okay? Now, I have cash value permanent life insurance, and this is a special kind called a second to die policy, okay? It doesn't pay out to both me and honey are dead, okay? But it's got cash value, okay? So it's a mix, mostly ownership, the equity I own, right? The liability that I'm paying for the risk of death exposure is a spend. Okay, y'all getting it. Y'all good. Okay, now I got payroll taxes, state and federal, Social Security, Medicare. Is that a spend, to give, an own, or what? No, that's a take. That's a okay, you don't got no choice, okay? Okay, in my book, that is primarily a spend with for this couple. Now, when they're 65 or 66 or age 70, it might become ownership, okay, if you live long enough and if it's properly funded, if Social Security doesn't go broke, okay? So let's keep going. Yes, Well, yes. As a matter of fact, if you're a government employee, you don't have to pay into Social Security. Okay, and you pay taxes, you pay payroll taxes, okay, but you don't have to pay into Social Security. Now, if you're self-employed, you pay in double Social Security, by the way. You know that, don't you? Social Security is what, 7.85%, whatever it is, okay? You pay that, and the employer matches it. When you're self-employed, you pay in both, okay? Let's keep going. My payments of tithes and offerings. Is that a spend with, a give with, or what? That's a give. What about a contribution to an emergency fund at my local bank? Is that a spend with, a give with, an own with, or a lend with? No, let's go over again. It's contributions to your emergency fund, okay? Your own emergency fund, okay? You own it, that's ownership, but primarily, depending on how you set it up, it's either a mixture between ownership and lend with, because you're giving it to the local bank. And by the way, you guys do know when you put money in a passbook account, even though it's FIDC insured, that doesn't mean anything. The bank does not have to give you your money on demand. Okay? And you make a run on banks, the bank can close and say, that's it, no more cash. There's nothing you can do. They can hold your money up to 6 months legally. Now, if it's in a checking account, it's yours on demand. But if it's in a passbook account, you have loaned the money to the bank. You have lent with savings account. Okay, now, you're paying expenses for Christian education. Is that a spend with, and give with, and own with, or a lend with? Okay, that's somewhat of a mixed one, okay, because, you know, for the most part, it's spend with money, okay? Now, however, there's no better investment than investment in yourself and in your children. No better investment. No better return on money than investing in yourself and investing in your children. As a matter of fact, if you're a young professional, you should take about 3 to 5% of your gross earnings and invest back into yourself every year. That's reading, extension courses, you know, night courses in the schools, you know, courses on the internet. You should constantly be investing money back in yourself. That's fertilizing the gift that God has given you. Development. No. E.G. White calls that recreation or recreation. Okay? She calls it recreation or recreation. Okay? Yeah. But E.G. White will also tell you that the best form of recreation and recreation is useful labor. Let's keep going. Okay. Oh, she's tough. She's tough. You can't. She is tough. Okay. Let's keep going. Now. Yes. Okay. The first part of which one now? Education is mostly a spend, but is the. Oh. Okay. Oh no. No. Yeah. Yeah. Higher education. I said if you are a young professional. You should reinvest about 3% of your earnings into yourself. That's an investment into you. Okay? That's for your own skills. Well, everybody can. I mean, I started a brand new career in my 50s. Okay? So I had to make the investment. That was a bold move, man. You've been downsized. You ain't got a job. You're sitting up there in Las Vegas and saying, what am I going to do? I'm going to start a brand new company, a brand new career. Is that crazy? I don't know nobody in Las Vegas ain't got one client. So So I started praying and said, God, what can I do? And he told me I never got to work again. As a matter of fact, he said, I'm going to give you at least $35,000 a year every year. If you just manage what I bless you with tax-free, you'll get that. Okay, let's keep going. Now, let's talk about this portfolio of ownership. Okay, according to the law of allocation, that means I got to use it. Okay, we are responsible for properly allocating income amongst the four uses of money. Okay, so every dollar we earn, we have to properly allocate it between these four uses. That's our responsibility. So you just can't spend everything and see what happens next week. Okay? And you just can't spend everything and then go in debt to get more stuff. See, I'm going to be very honest with you. I believe debt is immoral. Okay? Excessive debt is definitely immoral. And it's got nothing to do with the Bible verse that says, owe no man nothing except love. That's telling me you can't never outpay your debt to love me. So every time I come here, I should be the first in line. I'm a guest. See, I should leave here knowing I've been loved. You owe me that. Okay? I'm a child of God. You owe me the love you would give to, like you would give to a nephew, a niece that came. Okay? So, owe no man nothing but love. I can't get rid of that obligation. But to be in excessive amounts of debt, I claim that's immoral because you have to tell yourself two lies. And the worst lie is a lie to yourself. So the first lie you tell yourself, you see something that you just gotta have, and you gotta have it right now. Very seldom is that true. And then the next lie you tell yourself, I can go ahead and get the debt and manage it with all the other debt I got. That ain't nothing but just two lies right there. Whatever, and most people, when you get in a lot of debt, like $25,000 credit card debt, $10,000 credit card debt, you can't tell me what that money was spent for. You can't even tell me what it was you bought. And don't tell me it's Christmas. It was an emergency for Christmas. Christmas comes every year. It's never an emergency. And it's a lie. So, as God's people, we really got to start clearly counting the cost, calling these things the way they are. So, number one, I'm not a consumer. I'm an economic unit. I don't spend impulsively unless it's for some gum. Now, yeah, student loan debt is a real, I mean, you know, that's something we got to pray about. Number one, no, here's the problem. Here's my problem with student loan. Number one, colleges are too expensive, okay? And so what colleges did, they found out, they purchased advertising companies to determine how much they could charge for tuition based on what the market could afford to bear. Had nothing to do with their internal cost. And so it became popular who was going to charge the most, $25,000 a year, $30,000 a year, $50,000 a year to go to Stanford or Harvard. Okay? And now they're beginning to see that the investment in that education is not worth it. It's really not. You just do just as well going to Fresno State. My problem with student debt is, my fear is this, that students hock a lifestyle as a student. See, I went to school as a starving student. You understand? I had Sunday meal at my wife's house, so I wasn't going to eat nothing on Sunday. When I was dating my wife, they couldn't keep me away on Sunday. I knew what time Missionary Market, or what it was, St. Mark Missionary Baptist Church was out. I knew what time they'd be home, what time the fried chicken would be ready. Because I was a starving student. But when I graduated, I didn't have any student debt. I put all my kids through college. I didn't have college savings for them to go to college. But I had no debt. I have been 100% debt-free since 1986. No installment debt other than mortgages. And so when I had my kids in college, they were both going at the same time. I called one Lexus, and I called the other one Jaguar. So I put so much away every month for Lexus and put so much away for the Jaguar. But when they graduated, they didn't have student debt. Now, all their husbands did. Them knuckleheads they married had debt. One of them first held in the church. That brother had so much debt. If I'd have known the financial system, I'd have never agreed to it, yeah. So student debt, we have to be very careful with that, because what's happening, there's a very interesting article that there's an article in the Atlantic magazine. A lot of people don't read the Atlantic, and I don't read it all the time, but I like it because they have some pretty interesting piece in it. But they have one talking about the demise of the American middle class. And they came to the conclusion that they had to send their kids to college, get the grandparents to pay for it, and that there went their inheritance for education. So student loans is a hot spot. My thing is, be a starving student, okay? Which means live like a student. I slept on a mattress when I was a student. I could move in 10 minutes, throw everything in the car, put the mattress on the back and the hood of the car, and I'm gone. See? But folks now want to have the iPhone 6, and they want to have iPads and Mac computers, and this is crazy. So student debt is a problem, so we got to be careful. Now, let's talk about what should be in my portfolio of ownership. The number one thing I think should be in every person's portfolio of ownership is cash value life insurance. This is life insurance that builds cash value. And I can use that cash value anytime I want to, tax-free. And the cash value in the life insurance accumulates tax-free, never taxed. Okay? The next thing I should own are retirement accounts, 401ks, Roth IRAs, etc. If I'm self-employed, a SEP plan. If I want to, I should own a home and real estate. But if I'm going to buy a home, I should recognize my home is not an investment. Your home is your abode. That's your heaven on earth, home, if it's an Adventist home. That's where you raise your children and evangelize your neighbors. Okay? It does not have to make you money. And we just found out from the Great Recession, homes can lose big time value. So when you believe the lie that your home is an investment, everybody gets over. The bank gets over. And because see, the biggest lie about a home being an investment is that the bigger the home, the bigger the investment. Now they got you. So if you're going to buy a home, my advice, make sure you don't have too many rooms in your home. Okay? More rooms, the more utility bills. Okay? The more rooms, the more in-laws that want to come in and stay. Okay? The more rooms, the more you're going to pay taxes. The more rooms, the longer it takes to clean. So I would buy a modest home in a nice neighborhood. Okay? Let's keep going. I should buy gold, stocks, and bonds, and mutual funds. And I should own a small business. Now, contrary to most belief, most money is not in the stock market or gold. Most money is in cash and near cash. U.S. treasuries, bonds, corporate bonds. That's where the bulk of money is. It is, or it's in business ownership, but it's not in stocks. So most of us think that we're supposed to put our money in the stock market, and some of it should go in the stock market. But that ain't where the bulk of it should go. And by the time you get to be 60, 65, you should get out of the market altogether. Because it's guaranteed to crash every 8 to 6 years. Guaranteed like clockwork. Why play that game? Next, here's another slide, which is older. I hope you can read it. It's called The Consequences of Ownership. The Consequences of Ownership. If I spend and consume everything I have from a tax consequence, that's unfriendly. I pay a lot of sales tax, okay? I pay VAT tax, value-added tax. If I then spend and I have to enter into debt, then it becomes really bad, okay? If I give or give to charity, that's friendly. That's a tax deduction, and it's good. You should target 15% of your gross income to giving. If I lend money out and it earns interest, that's unfriendly. It's taxed. So what you lend out and get interest on, you got to pay tax on the interest, okay? Some people feel you're required to have 2 or 3 months of salary in what's called an emergency fund. Now, if I own with my money, ownership is always friendly, tax-wise. Nothing more friendly than real estate from a tax advantage. You know, it's really interesting. We were just talking, and we were asking ourselves the question, if you lost the tax deduction of real estate, would it be as attractive as it is if you couldn't deduct the mortgage? Then the next question we got to ask, if we dropped the deduction for charitable giving, would we give as much as we do? See, God don't care about the taxes. Render to Caesar the things that are Caesar. As least as possible. At least as possible. And you remember when Jesus went and got them coin, that coin out, he didn't get five. He got one. Now, 529 college funds. I don't like them anymore, but they used to be tax advantaged, and they still are. But I'm not a big proponent of 529 college fund. Small business ownership, cash value life insurance. You can notice I flipped those around. I did this about 10 years ago. I've now flipped them around, and I'm realizing that buying into cash value life insurance is the smartest thing you can do. Yes, ma'am. Oh, no, there's nothing wrong with them. There's nothing wrong with them at all. It's just that I think there are better alternatives. Okay, a 529 college fund says I can put money away, and if I use it for my children's college, all the capital gain is tax-free. Okay, but I got to verify how I've used it. Okay, and if there's another vehicle that will give me tax advantages better than a 529, I'd rather go with that. Personally. There's nothing wrong with it. I'm not as attracted to them as I used to be. Okay? And another thing, they invest in Wall Street primarily. And Wall Street's gonna crash. Guaranteed. Every 6 to 8 years. If anybody knows opportunity versus difficulty, it's Wall Street. It's called the business cycle. Let's go. Next. Yes. Yes. The cash value in life insurance, you should let it ride until you need it. Remember, all ownership, the purpose of ownership is to grow for future spending. You follow what I'm saying? So that means the cash value in life insurance, I'm going to spend it one day. I'm going to spend it. And so it all becomes strategic how I'm going to use these things. Okay, so I would say to put the money in there, and we're going to show that in another slide, how that cash value life insurance, you know, grows and looks. There are a lot of financial advisors who hate life insurance. hate cash value life insurance, okay? So if you listen to Susie Orman, who's more of an entertainer than she is a financial advisor, she will tell you she doesn't like life insurance, okay? Yes. At a certain age, at age 68 plus, start using it by taking loans from your own cash value that you never intend to pay back. You follow what I'm saying? Because Jesus is, the older you get, the faster Jesus is coming, okay? Or either probation is closing, okay? Let's keep going. Let's go to the next slide. What time is it? I need to speed things up. Okay, this is typical home ownership. And something went wrong here because that should have been a green arrow or something went wrong. But when you buy a home, isn't that a beautiful home? You buy a home, you start out with a little bit of equity and a whole lot of debt. You see that? Then over time, you end up with a whole lot of equity and zero debt. Okay? So a home ownership is good as long as you don't have too many rooms. Okay? Now, here's the cash value life insurance model. Okay? Okay? Here's a cash value life insurance model. Here's a model that's $100,000 cash value life insurance. And what you buy is level death benefit. And you put in money every month. And so when you first start out, you're buying primarily $100,000 of pure death benefit. And you're putting cash in. At some point, you'll have half the cash value to the death benefit, which means the amount of pure insurance has reduced. At some point, the amount of pure insurance almost goes to zero, and everything in there is your cash. It's fully endowed. Okay? Now, the beauty of that is all the cash that's in this policy, all the cash that's in this policy, it grows and accumulates 100% tax-free, never ever has to be reported. And if you die, it goes to your estate 100% or to your beneficiary 100%. Let's go to the next one. This is a Roth IRA ownership model. You start out with a little bit of cost basis over here. Put in $200 or $300 a month. Over time, the cost basis builds up. This is all after-tax money. And up here is all your tax-free gain. Okay? So with a Roth, when you hit 59 and a half, all of your tax, all your capital gains are 100% income tax-free. Everything you put in at cost basis is always tax-free. Now, it has to have been in place 5.5 years before you can start pulling money out at 59 and a half tax-free. So everybody should get a Roth IRA, okay, at some point, if nothing more than to start the 5-year clock. And the closer you get to 59 and a half, the more critical that 5-year clock is. Now, managing money properly, okay? I should first, with every money, which is the second slide we saw this morning, I should give my money a job. I should prayerfully decide, what are we going to give with? What are we going to own with? Are we going to lend with anything? The rest of it we can spend. If you do this, your spending is wise. If you spend first, there won't be money left over for ownership. And there ain't going to be nothing left for giving. That's the battle of the kingdoms. We've seen that. Now, I gave you this morning my definition of rich. I said if you are relatively healthy, and you have a job or a potential earning power, you are rich. By the way, very few people illegally come in this country that are medically infirmed, disabled, can't walk, can't get across the desert. Able-bodied people willing to work or to steal come into America. Those that are, you know, infirmed, not healthy, they stay home. Why make the journey? You know, and one of these days, if you really want to have an eye opener, sit down and talk to some illegal immigrants, and you ask them what they went through to get here. That's why when you go to most cities, I know brothers from Mexico and from Guatemala. They go to work every day, whether they got a job or not. Because they didn't come here to play. They go to work every day. I'll never forget, I was in a hotel once, and a little lady from Guatemala, beautiful little Indian lady, big, round face, dark eyes, you know, and I told her to come on in and, you know, have a seat, sit down, you know, you don't have to clean up, you know. Yeah, I just need some, you know, toilets, some towels. And I said, relax, take it easy. And she said, no, I gotta work. I said, I know, no trabajar, no comer. No es verdad. That's not true. Not in my country. Dígame, talk to me then. No trabajar, no vida. No life. You ain't working, you ain't living. I said, oh man, if that ain't the truth. I walked away from that interaction and I said to myself, I got a whole new theology. Not called worship, but workship. Workship. Working for my Lord. Workship. Come to church on Sabbath to rest and let the pastor work. Because 6 days a week, I'm going to be about workship, solving problems, doing things, enterprising myself, growing the gift that God's given me. So here's my definition of wealth. I gave you what it means to be rich, and I want you to move from rich to wealth. Wealth is when the wage earner falls ill, when the crops fail, when the business market declines, when difficulties come. When the tenant leaves in the middle of the night, okay? Wealth ensures that medical bills are paid, food is on the table, children are educated, babies are cared for, homes are heated. Wealth can pass to the younger generation. Wealth makes more stable marriages, healthier children and adults, and better informed citizens. That's what wealth is, the ability to maintain a quality of living while not working. While not earning an income. And so all money is to grow in ownership to the point where I no longer want to work, can't work, or won't, or whatever. And maintain my same quality of income. It dawned on me that if I'm going to work every day, I should be able to retire at a higher income than what I had working. Now, most of you think that's impossible. I'm here to tell you it's not. The least thing you should do is retire at no less than 90% of your pre-retirement income, which means that giving in the church never ends. See, that doesn't mean senior citizens just eat more and just don't contribute no more money. Because we have set ourselves up as what? As production economic units. You realize that in the natural, an oak bears its biggest yield of acorns when it knows it's coming to its end. And the Bible says that our last day should be greater than our first. Now, this is what happens to Social Security. This is an interesting slide, and it shows you that if you have a salary of about $19,000 a year, your tithe should be about $1,900 a year. At retirement, if this was your salary at retirement, Social Security will replace 56% of that. If you're making around $42,000, Social Security should replace about 41%. If you're making $106,000 a year, Social Security is only going to replace 25% of your income. So this other 75%, or this 66%, or this 44%, in order for you to stay whole, has to come from ownership. And that's when you take your ownership and transfer it into monthly income, monthly stipends. That means that my giving doesn't have to change. My vacation pattern doesn't have to change. I don't have to start eating dog food at Costco on sale. I don't have to go through that. You know, and what's nice about it is that most of that stuff is ain't got no meat in it, so it's probably vegan. Okay, does everybody see that this stuff should not catch us by surprise? The worst thing in the world to be is when you get to be 65 years old and realize that on Social Security is only going to pay for 25% of your income. Where's the other 75% going to come from? Half of all baby boomers are flat broke. Half of all baby boomers are flat broke. Zip. Zero net worth. So that means baby boomers who are flat broke depend on living on 50% of their salary from Social Security. That's why Social Security will never go away. It will never go bankrupt. Everybody be eating dog food if Social Security went away. Okay. Let's take a look at the phases real quick, the phases of your life. You go through an accumulation phase. Now, before you're 25, you're just kind of discovering who you are and what your purpose is. But once you get to be, you know, an accumulation phase, you start working, 45 to about 25 to, age, to 48. Then you have a pre-retirement phase, 45 to about 60. Then you got your retirement planning phase. Then the next phase is called death and legacy. Okay? And that's when you pass on the blessings from this life, this generation to the next. And those blessings should be monetary as well as lessons learned. Okay? And so everybody who is age 60 plus and you have children, it is mandatory for you to have the talk with them. What do you mean? I thought I had the talk when they were 16 and 15. No. Now that you're 60 plus years old, you need to have the talk with them so that they can understand the economics of your retirement. Listen. If your children, your adult children, don't understand the economics of your retirement and future legacy, they'll never understand their own. So you got to come clean. Mom and Dad are going to retire in a few years. We're going to probably retire at about 70 to 80% of our working income with Social Security. Or Mom and Dad are going to retire pretty soon. We're going to probably retire at 105% of our working income. And this is the type of legacy future we're thinking about. By the way, you probably won't be in it, but we'll leave some for the grandkids. So you got to force the talk with your children. I had the talk with my mother, and it scared me to death. That woman was on SSI. I didn't even know what SSI was. You know what SSI is, don't you? That's welfare for senior citizens. That's when your Social Security check is below, so low that they give you welfare. And so I said, well, you know, wait a minute. You know, what's the deal? You know, and so I went down and got a gold card. A gold, you know, MasterCard, whatever it was. I said, here's a credit card. It's gold. It ain't got no limit on it. You'll never see the bill. You use it any way you want to, anytime you want to, for anything. Only one stipulation. If I see you buying anything for them other folks, I'm cutting it off. You buy a radiator for Uncle Charlie's car, I'm cutting it off. See? You buy shoes for my nephews and nieces, I'm cutting it off. But as long as it's for you, anything you want to buy, no questions asked. And wouldn't you know, my Uncle Charlie had some of his druggy friends in the house, and they stole my mom's gold card. We had to run them folks down to get the card back, okay? We invited Uncle Charlie not to come back for a while, okay? Next one. Okay, now this is going to get fun, and we're going to speed it up. We got some principles to talk about. And let's keep going. Okay, principle number one, all spending is emotional. Now, that ain't true. No. Spending money almost always has a powerful emotional impact on our lives, whether we realize it or not. That's why we love doing it. Number two, principle number two. By the way, these principles are immutable. They're like the Ten Commandments. Choose the one you don't like, and I'll be able to explain to you why you are suffering with poverty. Number two, when you track your money, you can control it. Same thing happens with the food you eat. When you track the food you eat, you can control how much you spend and how much you eat, and therefore you can control your weight. Number three, saving is delayed spending. When we save and invest in ownership, we do it for a strategic reason in the future. Oh, man. You know, there are three personalities in the Bible that will give you everything you need to know about managing prosperity. And they were the richest people in their generation. One was Father Abraham. Ellen White says he was the richest man of his time. Abraham, Father Abraham. But he masked his wealth because he lived like a commoner. As a matter of fact, you would have been blessed to be one of his servants. The other wise and rich personality in the Bible was King Solomon. However, he masked his genius with excessiveness. Okay? And the other personality is Jesus of Nazareth. And he masked his wealth with humility and humanity. But we got this strange feeling that he was poor and homeless and didn't have. No. He was wise, full of wisdom. And wisdom is nothing more than the application of biblical scripture to solve a human problem. That's why you can look to Jesus for anything. Number three, saving, all savings, is in future spending. Number four, if you power down your debt, you'll power up your fortune. Okay? Yes. You don't want to be a graduate from any college in $100,000 in debt. Unless you're going to be a doctor. Okay? And even then, people don't understand. All doctors don't make $500,000 a year. Matter of fact, in the medical profession, the guys that make the most money are the ones that do the LASIK surgery on the eyes. They make easily $500,000 a year. Okay? Principle number five, know the rules. Principle number six, the rules are always changing. Okay. So you got to know them. You got to be edified. Somebody needs to come here once a year and talk about what rules are impacting you now. Okay? They just changed a major rule with Social Security. Most people don't know nothing about it. And Obama and his administration has never been able to work with the Republicans. They passed in a heartbeat a law that went into effect the last day in the month of April that cut out three elements of Social Security forever. And it was so funny because they said almost only 9% of the population was using them, and they were mostly rich people. I'm going to use it. Okay? Number seven, always look to the big picture. Your big picture. Know where you're going. And then all of your saving and all of your managing of money has a strategic end. Number 8, organization enables the creation of additional wealth. Organization. So you should know where all your stuff is of ownership. You should understand what your portfolio of ownership looks like. Nobody should have to give you an annual giving report every year. You should know what your giving is. Number 9, understanding taxations enables you to retain more money. Understanding taxation. And it's unfortunate they've made taxes so complicated, most of us don't understand it. Okay, here's principle number 10. This principle is difficult to understand, and all I got to do is tell you to trust me on it, and if we continue in faith and finance, we'll make it make sense. And this principle says money in motion creates more money. Powerful notion. The one talent servant set on his assets. He stagnated money. You never stagnate money. You put it to work. You give it a job to do. You invest it properly. Or you give it away. Now, these principles are powerful. Now, let's see what next we got. What time is it? We started at 3. I'm going to try to go for another 15 minutes, okay? Now, I want to summarize everything that we've talked about so far, and let me know if this makes sense. This is where we are. We start out with a source of income, and the biblical principle of building wealth comes from income. All wealth is to come from income. It is not biblical to build your wealth in the California lottery or going to Las Vegas, lost wages, okay? That's not the biblical process of building wealth. Building wealth biblically says it grows over time and accumulates. So everything starts from income. The local church is supported with your income. Your children's Christian education is supported with income. Your home purchase is supported with income. The gasoline in your car, everything is supported with income. From that comes payroll taxes. Now you start budgeting what you have disposable, and you put the plan together and you track how you spend. Now you have targets. 15% of not this, but 15% of that goes toward ownership. 15% of that goes toward giving and heavenly treasures. What left over goes to spending and the general economy. What is in your ownership or your net worth should double every 7 to 9 years. And if we do that, we'll have a graph that kind of looks like this. Number one goal is to get ownership up to $100,000 as quickly as possible. $100,000 of ownership. That means, you know, stop eating McDonald's. See, that may mean that I got to decide, do I need 200 cable stations or 38? Or none. You see, let me kind of say this. One of the slickest games we got going in this society today is to stick on every one of y'all about a $200 to $800 head tax. Meaning, with your cable TV, with your cell phone, with your data plan, okay, with your exercise club, okay, if I can hit you with about 5 to 8 items that I get from you every month, whether you get out of bed or not, that's a head tax. And you got poor people, young families, trying to live outside of their means and cover this head tax. It's too much. We got to stop that madness. So this is the way money wants to grow. Every 7 to 9 years, it wants to double. Okay? New word, cash versus liquidity. Liquidity is the state of being liquid, or the quality of being readily convertible into cash. Available cash, or the capacity to obtain it on demand. Believe it or not, we all need more liquidity than we do cash. We need liquidity. And if I got enough liquidity, I no longer need an emergency fund, because I have liquidity. And I can get my liquidity from my home ownership, or I can get it from cash value life insurance, or I can get it from a few other places. But I've already have to plan my life in such a way where I know where my liquidity is coming from. And the liquidity allows me to say I can respond to needs within the local church when need be. But if I have no liquidity and I'm caught up in the battle of the world and the kingdom of God on managing money, church can't be helped. Here's three questions that I had misconceptions of, and I never really figured them out for myself. And there are three questions that all of you should have or will have at some point. And the first one, is it good that I pay off my mortgage or my home before I retire? Yes or no, okay? And I won't tell you my answer to that because it would surprise you, okay? Number two, should I buy term life insurance and invest the difference rather than owning permanent life insurance, since term life insurance is cheaper, okay? By the way, that's a mixed conception. Term life insurance and whole life insurance and permanent life insurance is all the same. The cost is all the same. It's whether or not you're building up equity, okay? And so it appears to be cheaper, but it's not, okay? And number three, I have a 401k. I got a job, I got a 401k, my employer contributes so much. Do I need either a Roth IRA or a traditional IRA? If so, which one and why? So does anybody want to help me on my three problems? Should I pay off my mortgage before I retire? Should I retire mortgage-free and sit on my house paid for, sit on my asset? Yes, yes, yes. If my mortgage is paid off, then I got no more tax write-off. It's over. The only thing I can write off maybe is my property tax. I have ownership of the home, right? I ain't paying no more mortgage, okay? Yeah, you know, because it becomes an individual choice. Yes, the question in the back. Now, that is not a recognizable deduction for interest. That is correct. Okay. Yes. During the housing crunch, I had a client in Las Vegas. He came to me. He had a townhome. And townhomes and trailer parks got hit worse in the housing crash. Okay. And so he said, what should I do, man? I said, well, first of all, you need a house where your family live in, right? I said, yes. You got a GI Bill, go out and buy another house right now. And if you got to, walk away from that house. Just walk away from it. They ain't going to put you in jail, okay? And you can always negotiate a short sale. But now you're in another house, okay? And that's the most important thing. You now have shelter for your family. Home ownership is good as long as he doesn't have too many rooms. money use budget that is divided into the categories of spending, giving, lending, and owning. Do you see that? You can't give your money a job without some type of a budget like this. You got to put some type of plan together like this to determine what you want to do with money. So this couple is making a gross salary of $44,400 a year. Do you see that? Okay? And we got everything broken out, and at the very end, they got about 2.7% of their money unallocated, exactly $101 a month. Now, if we look at their giving, they're giving at 7%. They're owning at 8. Is that 8? Yes, at 8.1%. So the first question we should figure out is, what should we do with that extra $101 a month? Should we give it to spending?